and welcome to Marooned at MacBytes headquarters. Day 168. How are we all doing? Hello, Kim. Kim's off to get dinner. Hello, Jonathan. Oh, what's Jonathan got? A testing centre right on the doorstep. Oh, I hadn't seen that, Jonathan. Let me go and have a look. And hello, Deb, CQ. I made the fatal error today, while I go read Jonathan's story, checking the news sites. Stop me doing that. I've decided everybody on the planet, apart from you guys, complete idiots. There are no words for them. Oh, it's a tent, Jonathan. So are we supposed to... Is this the... Is that where the retail park was? It was far more use as a retail park. It looks like a field hospital. I've got the theme to MASH in my head now. Four new Corona walk-in testing centres. Fabulous. Tents and generators and lights. Do you know, I wonder if they're going to ship Pete in to deal with this. Crying out loud. And no communication with residents. That is very close, Jonathan. Are you concerned? I mean, by definition, people who are going there think they've got it. And now they're congregating near you, Jonathan. Just get some bricks, brick the door up and be done. You know, we were talking about the Black Death and how on earth did the Black Death die out? And it turned out to be, with Mike's research, that people self-isolated. So pretty much like we're doing now. And the ones that survived, they didn't go out. So us guys who are all locked in safely, holiday or no holiday, we will survive this. Everybody else, you know, if you're minded to go out, if you are that ridiculous, can you do it sooner rather than later? So we can get rid of you first. It's idiotic. I love that tweet where somebody says, what's going on? There's been no communication with residents. They didn't even tell you. That is unbelievable. Thank God there's nowhere around here big enough to put something like that, is all I can say. We do have a large football field, but it's over half a mile away. I guess the other place they could stick it is in the park, the one where Lola loves to go, and it's got its own 18-hole golf course. That would be big enough. You could put it there. But that is absolutely ludicrous. I was reading a story earlier today about a rave. Somebody had a rave over the weekend. Now, how many people were in that? It was about 500. Why do that now? Because from memory, this wasn't happening before. Is it a kind of... You've been all cooped up and now you feel the need to rave. I don't understand it. Jonathan can see it from his window. Oh, that's ludicrous. That's quite scary, Jonathan. I know they said like 2 metres and you should be okay. But then somebody else said a sneeze can go 8 metres. But surely the risk goes up the more people that are congregated there. And now they're right next to you. This working from home thing, maybe you need to be somewhere else and work from there. I would be very peeved about that. The lack of communication is what would do my head in. I mean, not directly on point, but similar. Last night when we were on by request, I put the CCTV monitor on my iPad so I could see when the Tesco lorry arrived. And as I turned it on initially, there was the front of a white vehicle. I won't say car. It was a white vehicle. It's like, it's quite unusual for the UK. It's like a little truck. It's kind of got like a flatbed bit on the back. It's huge. And it belongs 2 doors down. And they parked it right outside our fence with obviously the front end of it where I could see it across our front path. Within 10 minutes, I'd looked back at it and there was another car, a black one, that had pulled up to it bumper to bumper. So you literally could not get to our gate and we've got a delivery. And I said to Mike, have you seen this? And he said, oh, yeah, it's terrible out there. There's about 17 cars. It's just downright rude. The Tesco lady arrived eventually. I think it was 10 minutes into her allotted slot. And I said to Mike, as I screamed down the stairs at him, do let her know that they're not our vehicles. And she did make a point. She'd had to park opposite. But by this stage, the road, and you know how tiny it is, the road was triple parked. So there was the cars opposite, there was the cars outside ours, and she'd had to pull up. So if anybody wanted to get past, then the road was blocked. And there was literally nowhere else for her to park. People are so... Well, that annoyed me. Even though I can't stop people parking on the road, in the UK, we have... At a T-junction, we have lines painted on the road. Let me know if this is the same in the States. The lines, if it's a solid line, you have to stop and you have to apply your handbrake. That's the rule. And we do have some of those around here. But a lot of them are not a thick, solid line. It's kind of a dashed line. You are intended to stop. It's a T-junction, obviously. But you don't need to do the full stop thing. But there is also a line that goes down the middle of the road. Now, our road is a residential road. It's a very tiny road. You know, there's only 8 houses on it. But it has this dashed line and it goes right up to our back gate. That means no parking. And within that area of that line, there were 6 vehicles. That does annoy me. So I can't stop people parking outside my house. But the fact that this dashed line is up the middle of the road should actually indicate to people. But I bet if you said to people, do you know what that line means? They wouldn't have a clue. And the police are far too busy with the COVID idiots having raves for you to ring them and say somebody's parked in a no parking zone. So they're getting away with it. But I do find that downright rude. I can only imagine how bad it would be to have a COVID testing centre within sight of the place. And the fact that they didn't let anybody know, I know it's temporary and I know they're the council so they can give themselves permission, but even so, not fun for you to look out over, Jonathan. Right. Hello, Anthony. How are you doing? Kim says 4 metres. I'm finding, you know, a brick wall between us more than adequate myself. Mike's certainly keeping away from people, both from a physical perspective and a mental perspective, when you get people that are rather tired of it all, to a rather alarming extent, shall we say, who are thinking that not being on the planet anymore is a good idea. Wow. If I was feeling like that, I don't think I'd be sharing that publicly. I'd be trying to deal with it. But that's what we're facing. They should do drive-in sites and then they wouldn't need to get out of their car. They have tried that. They're usually a little bit out of town, but they got pilloried for it, Kim. The rationale was not everybody's got a vehicle. So it was as though it was another opportunity to turn it into a row, rather than say, well, for those that have, go there. And for everybody else, maybe walk to the nearest whatever. But this is obviously a walk-in centre, which seems... Have you noticed there's nothing on the ground yet to put in the 2 metre thing? You know, I always feel the last place I need to be if I'm ill is actually at the doctor's. Because if I do that, I'm bound to pick up something from somebody else. But that's probably just me. I just think it's shocking that. And it does look a little bit like a building site, doesn't it? Oh, Jonathan, you have my sincere sympathies. Put a complaint in. As Jonathan says, not everybody has a car. The other thing is, I presume that's a lot for workers who are actually going into the city centre. And unfortunately, Jonathan, you're fairly central there, aren't you, for quite a lot of places. Within a mile of that, I would say there's probably thousands of people who may use a walk-in centre. That's scary beans. Hello, Paul! Research says that rats and fleas were the likely spreaders of the bubonic plague and Black Death. I could believe that. I've seen history of particularly London, and it was a toilet, basically, until probably the mid-19th century. It wasn't good. So I can understand that. It's just like they didn't have... We're waiting... Well, some people are. I'm not. But some people are waiting for a vaccine. I don't know whether we would get that in a time scale that would be useful. But back then they didn't have that. And yet it died out or it got dealt with. You know, it didn't carry on endlessly. I didn't study history. The history I did was very boring. So when I got the option to drop history, I dropped it because I did find it incredibly boring. But the stuff we did was the history of farming in the UK circa 1200. I found it absolutely awful. And that was why I dropped it. But I would have loved to have done more modern history, you know, from, say, 1800 onwards. I think even if you just started in the 1600s, I felt that that would have been more interesting and more beneficial in the future. So I dropped it, unfortunately, and I don't really have, you know, this kind of a gap in my education about these things. But it did just disappear. How did it disappear? How long did it take? You know, history is really useful. You know, if you don't repeat the mistakes, but unfortunately, a big gap. But you guys have probably got more idea than me because you're doing your genealogy, so you would know automatically about things like that. Me, less so. Not my area, I'm afraid. But this doesn't seem to be going down anytime soon. We are still being told that local lockdown is ending on Wednesday. But a story came out today that the infection rate in Trafford has risen again. So why are they now, when I say local lockdown, I mean the strictest local lockdown. We're still going to be in lockdown. It's just a different level of lockdown. So I think it's two houses could meet up again, whereas at the moment, nobody can. But with the rate rising already after being in lockdown for nearly 4 weeks, why would you change that? Why would you make that right? Well, you know, you can meet up again when it's actually getting worse already. Don't understand it. Do not understand it. So from the first, people will be able to meet with other households indoors and in their gardens. But you've still got to maintain social distance. But the rates are on the increase and the council asked the government for us to remain in lockdown. But it's Graham Brady that's not having it. He wants all restrictions lifted across the entire borough. Maybe we should just lock him up. That might work. So Kim says, I have to get a COVID test prior to a pulmonary function test. And I have to get, but I get to go on a separate testing site for people who are not exposed. Now, we see that's sensible. Can't see that happening here. Deb says the area was not a high COVID infection site. Lots of houses around a shopping centre. I hear you. You can't really, Jonathan's right, you can't get much more central than him, unless you pitch a tent in Piccadilly Gardens. And to be honest, you're probably close enough to that to see it anyway. It is shocking. I'm worried about you now, Jonathan. When you go out walking, don't walk in that direction. Go the other way. Head towards us. Oh, mind you, that's not good either, is it? Because our COVID rate's on the increase. Jonathan, have you thought of a treadmill in the house? With your air conditioning unit, it's tantamount to going out. Oh, but then you have to see Nanny Isaacs, don't you? Oh, this is getting very, very difficult. Can you imagine? We don't know enough about this. We don't know the impact of putting a site like that close to housing. What about the waste from the site? Where's that going? Why didn't they put it in GMEX? Because they built that up to be a Nightingale hospital and it still sat there. In mothballs. Why not use that? Half the equipment's already there. Why just randomly? Well, it's a shame they hadn't built something on it, Jonathan. They'd have built something on it. Instead of which, they're kind of installing basically bouncy castles for COVID testing. Not good. Not good. So Anthony says the ones in Keighley and Bradford, the idea is you just walk in and have a test rather than having to book an appointment. Issue with that is, though, you know, if you don't book appointments, I appreciate if you do book appointments, people don't turn up. You know, on a serious note, someone could have actually dropped from it if you booked an appointment. But by not having some kind of appointment system, you risk the fact of, oh, there's nothing good on the telly, I'll go for a test. Or people turning up in their lunch hours and then you're busy, but it's not evenly spread across the day. There isn't a perfect answer, but could have done with being thought about, couldn't it? So England has some very interesting early property rights, from the open areas being taken over, small villages losing the land plots, which were used for farming, grazing and gathering. I can imagine that. That's why I would have loved to have studied more modern history. Wasn't it somebody's seed machine? Oh, it was way back in the day. I also did the kind of history. I've no idea. I turned off, I'll be honest with you. I loathed history with a passion, but only because they made it incredibly boring. Since then, I found history absolutely fascinating. But to be honest, most of my stuff was after school. I actually hated school, full stop. But things like when I joined, our English, we had not done English literature in the first year. So when I joined in my school, I was in the second year of high school, hadn't done any English literature at all. We were supposed to do that in the third year of high school. But because I'd moved schools, it was like, and these are your English literature books. And I'm like, English literature? What? And that year we did The Merchant of Venice, which is, a bit advanced for 12 years of age, The Merchant of Venice. What was the other books we did? I can't even, that's how bad it is. I can't remember the other books. Then we went into our O level year and we did Midsummer Night's Dream. There was actually a whole choice that you could choose from. But because we were the stupid group, if you remember, we were the bottom English group, we got to do Midsummer Night's Dream. Mike, however, at his school, they picked the other one and they were doing Arthur Miller, the one about the witches. You know the one I mean, Arthur Miller. Oh, what was it called? Oh, it will come to me. And that one was much more interesting. The Crucible. It was much more interesting as far as I was concerned. But once I left, Mike didn't enjoy English literature. But once he'd left, his mind was, I'm never touching a book again. My mind was, I'm never touching a book again. And what happened was, in the UK, there was a law about book prices. And the Tory government, some point in the early 80s, early to mid 80s, got rid of this restriction on book prices. And it meant that a lot of classics suddenly appeared at 99 pence. And I knew the names of some of these classics, and I thought, well, 99 pence, I might read that. But, I'm not paying £10 for a book that I might not enjoy. And I just took to reading and absolutely loved it. But, it was kind of despite school, not because of it. But history, I would have loved to have known more. I really would. I guess the only bit of history I did after leaving school, other than stuff I'd researched myself, was I did land law. And land law, you have to understand right back to tithes and stuff. So I did do a little bit for land law. But other than that, no, sadly, which I regret now, but the teachers just weren't good enough. Right, let's catch up here. Hello, Paul. How's life down under? Yeah, Jonathan needs to get out when nobody else is around. Basically. Although I'm thinking a treadmill indoors, you know. Now you've got rid of the wallpaper that would have made you dizzy. You could have that bedroom. You could even point it to the window, unless the window overlooks the retail park. In which case, you need something I saw on Amazon the other day. What was I looking for? Oh, a backdrop, like a green screen. I was looking for something like that, and I have no idea what I typed in. Let's try this. But I found this amazing, it's not coming up now, is it? Oh, typical, typical, typical. What I put screen, so let's try. Instead of that, let's try background. I must have put background in at some point. And I found this thing and I thought, oh, that would be amazing to put on a door, to put on the wall. And basically, it was like a sticker, but it was like 6 foot 6. And it was a doorway. So imagine a wall where you don't have a door on it, but you put this like sticker on it, the 6 foot 6. And it looked like an open door. And then the view that you had through it was like the most beautiful sunset. We could put a fake window in for you, Jonathan, and you could look at that. Just don't leave the house. We can't afford to lose you. You're far too important. Tell them they'll have to shift it. I said so. We took a vote on Magpies. It's got to go. It's just not good enough. I think we turned that into a drama, Kim, Beowulf. I didn't watch it. That was one that didn't appeal. My mum didn't like the one she had either. It was Mill on the Floss. But afterwards, I absolutely loved them. The last Shakespeare I went to, because I certainly wasn't a fan of Shakespeare, I only went to this particular Shakespeare. The first one I went to since school was Midsummer Night's Dream. And I loathed it the first time round, so I wasn't likely to like it this time around, was my thinking. But I only went because my favourite actor came to the Octagon in Bolton, and he did two plays back to back. It's what they call through casting. And the idea of it is it costs the theatre less and the actors get two plays. So he'd been in two plays. There was Arthur Miller, All My Sons, and they went straight into Henrik Ibsen's Ghosts. So, of course, each one was on for 4 weeks, and there'd also been like the rehearsal time in the summer. So they were there for like 3 months. So the first night of the Arthur Miller one, All My Sons, got talking to the director. And the director was saying, you know, what do you think of this particular actor? And I said, she's fantastic. And he said, now, one of them was American, and I presumed it was this one because the play's American. They all had American accents. And he said, no, she's not. She's from London. The other one, who was called Tammy, she was from America. And I said, well, she's even better than I thought. And it was Vanessa Kirby. So it was Vanessa Kirby's very first professional performance. She went on to star in The Crown as Princess Margaret. So we got talking to her and the rest of the cast over the next 2 months. And I'd done a review for a website as well, and she was thrilled with that. That was her first professional review. So she got it printed and framed. Because I particularly said she was fantastic. And she said, you've got to come back for my next one. She said, I'm going home for Christmas, but then in February, I'm coming back for Midsummer Night's Dream. So I tried not to show my face, you know, oh dear. But she said, you've got to come, please come, please come. So we duly booked two tickets and up we rocked. So Mike's like, I'm not going to enjoy this. I said, neither am I, but just sit there with a smile on your face. And you know, it was amazing. That every single character was fantastic and it was an amazing production. Obviously, I knew the storyline, but you know, Mike enjoyed it as well. And after that, we went back for some more. So I think the last one we went to was Hamlet, and I'd waited for Hamlet for that was 2011. So, no, 2009 it was. Oh, good grief, that's a little while ago. Probably about two years ago, maybe. So about 8 years, 9 years, I'd waited for Hamlet. It was a modern interpretation, which is always usually a sign of don't bother. I thought it was good. I liked it. Mike hated it. I don't think it helped. There was a match on that night. Mind you, I'd sat and listened to a football match in the first Midsummer Night's Dream. So, you know, it's easily done. But he loathed it. Absolutely loathed it. I guess it just depends. Now, Kim's mum loved Mill on the Floss. I've never read it either. But my mum was very much like, oh, it was horrible. It was you. I did not like that. So I guess she kind of put me off it. But I certainly did my own kind of literature with one that I really adored, absolutely adored, was Wuthering Heights. And I didn't expect to. I thought, oh, it's going to be all moors and dark and dreary, and I actually really liked it. I'll never forget my mum, as I'm reading the book, saying it's a really good book, but it kind of changes in the middle. And she had watched the film with Laurence Olivier, and she said, what do you mean it changes in the middle? So I said, well, when she dies. And mum went, that's not the middle, it's the end. And I'm like, which version she read? So I said, no, the bit in the middle where she dies and then Heathcliff. And she said, yeah, but that's the end. So I'm like, we're clearly talking about different books here. But it turned out, I didn't know, I'd never seen it at that point. I'd only read the book, all of it. The version of the film with Laurence Olivier, that's where it ended. But actually, that's ridiculous, because that's the middle of the book. The book carries on. And this film didn't. So Mum had no idea that the story that was in the film, as far as she was concerned, she'd seen the film. No, not the same book at all. Oh, dear. I know, Auntie is interested in social history, how people lived. So you're reading Domestic Revolution, Ruth Goodwin. Now, that sounds good. That's the kind of thing I'd be interested in. That's about how the changes that resulted from us burning coal. That's very much the kind of history I would have adored. And thing was, my mum had said, like, oh, well, you'll be doing the history of the war, surely. And she was talking about from 1900 onwards. You didn't get to do that until you were in sixth form, which by which point, if you'd already dropped history at O level, you couldn't take it at A level. Why make you suffer all of the boring stuff that doesn't have as much relevance to your understanding of the world? I mean, it's all very well that some bloke had this thing that you know, seeded soil. Whatever. That's not the kind of history that would have been interesting to me. Political history would have been amazing. Social history would have been amazing. But not, I wish I could. I mean, it shows you what use it was. I can't remember the guy's name. But I know it was some kind of device that planted seeds, and I couldn't be less interested. That meant after school, I was at university and I was doing law. I had a job because I was paying privately. So I had not exactly a full-time job, but, you know, certainly at least a 50% of the time job. And I wanted to teach myself the stuff they didn't actually bother teaching me at school. There weren't enough hours in the day. Oh, and I was just about getting into computers as well. So I needed that. Oh, thank you, Anthony. I will definitely have a look at that. I've read so many books since, but I haven't actually. I realise now there's kind of a gap that I didn't do anything about plagues and things like that or social history in these terms. But that looks fabulous. Oh, yes. I shall get that stuck on my Kindle and have a look at it. The one thing that I did look at last year in those terms, and again, this is very, very close to Jonathan, was the Peterloo Massacre. There's a hotel there now, which is typical. The Blue Radisson. Radisson Blue Hotel. But that, again, how could a child possibly, in Manchester, my school was no more than 2.5 miles from the site of the Peterloo Massacre. I had never even heard of it. There was no memorial to it. There was nothing. It wasn't taught at all. And when I thought, well, there's this book out and there's a film coming out. And I'm like, that's Manchester. And then I did a bit of research and we've got, you know, Stuart's wife, Ellen. She was a nurse, but she has since done a degree in history and she loves that kind of stuff. So her and Stuart do like local history walks that we've been on. Fascinating stories. Particularly, I mean, we did Sale Cemetery, then we went all around Altrincham and they were pointing out like plaques that you walk past every day that you take no notice of at all. And the stories were amazing. Why couldn't they have made it that interesting in history? Would have been fabulous. What's happening with my iMac? Nothing, Jonathan. It's enjoying a little bit of a restette at the moment. But we will be getting around to that this week. We have done a little bit of work. I don't think it's a spoiler if I tell you. We decided we need to give Lola some time in the holiday. So Lola needs to take a priority in terms of how much tech we're doing. Her toys have arrived today, but ludicrously, the ball arrived this morning, flat as a pancake, about 10:30. The pump out for delivery. The pump has only just arrived. So she's looking at this box and I'm saying, not yet, Lola, not yet, because we need the pump. In the meanwhile, she's having an absolute ball, as you can probably hear, with the old ball. Now it's more like a frisbee. Mike can throw it as a frisbee and she's running after it, but it just doesn't roll anymore. There she goes. So we'd made a decision that Lola must come first. But we also had found a problem. And one of our problems, you'll love this one, Jonathan. We wrote a script to process the show notes for MacBytes. Well, when I say we, I discussed it with Mike and he said, if that's what you want to do, fine. So I wrote this script and it's been working for at least 20 episodes of MacBytes. So it's the show notes script. So after we came back after our little hiatus with 130. Yes, it was 130. Or was it 129? Whichever one we came back with. I exported the notes from Scrivener. I ran the script on them and it was all wrong. And I'm looking at it thinking, how could it be wrong? Because it's a script. You pop the same source in, you should get the same thing out. No. So I thought, do I stop and take the time and fix the script? And I thought, I haven't got the time to fix the script. You know, literally, I don't have the time to fix the script. So I processed them manually. That put me off coming up to the next show knowing that this script was broken. But it was one of those things, I can't tell you how long it will take me to fix the script because I don't know why it's broken. It shouldn't be broken. So why is it broken? All right. So that's where we were at on pass. So we decided we would do it in the holiday. But the thing was, you could start a job like that and it could take all day. Oh, you're back.
Yes.
We've heard Lola.
Yes.
She's having fun out there. So anyway, this script was obviously important.
Running around with a flat football in her mouth.
Yes, I've explained the situation with the frisbee ball. But she's enjoying it, bless her little cotton socks. So the problem with fixing the script was, what do you do? Do you allocate yourself 2 hours and see how you get on? Or do you say, I'm just going to plug away at this until it's finished? And that could take all week. But it was kind of important because every job that we did where we needed to use this script was taking 10 times as long because we didn't have the script to do. So yesterday, we'd obviously had a late night on Friday, but when we reconvened, it was like, should we have a look at that script? Yeah, let's have a look at the script. And I'd been incredibly naughty, hadn't I? Hadn't totally documented this script. Pro tip, always document your scripts. But the reason that I hadn't was, I got like prototype 0.01. And every time I ran it, it was like, okay, that needs tweaking slightly. So what I'd done was tell myself I'd get the thing perfect and then I'd document it. And obviously way before that happened, it crashed and burnt. So I'm looking at this script thinking, I wonder what that did. Why did I put that there? What did I put that bit in for? So I actually said to Mike, we made sure the first script was working. So there's two processing units and there's a script holding them together. So I tested the script part of it and that seemed to be working. So then I needed to drill down into the other two bits. The first one was fine. So that takes us on. At least we'd narrowed down what was going on. We've got a search and replace going on in this script. So this will show you just how bad it was. It searched for a set of text that was predictable. And it deleted it. So you did a search for this, replace it with nothing. And that was fine. I checked every other step. And there wasn't one that said, search for X and insert Y. But Y was appearing in the final result. And I said to Mike, this is nonsensical. So we looked at it and it was like, oh, to fix this. And it had something like 15, 16, maybe even 20 steps. So I thought, what if I just started from scratch? And I managed to take this script down from like the 20 steps it had into, I think it was 4 or 5.
Yeah.
And it worked. And then I rescripted. There was one more thing that could have been optimised. So I did that. And so far, so good. So I actually thought it was a BB edit script, which Kim wanted to look at. So I thought I would put that in next Friday's show. So it'll be how we process the show notes and how I actually scripted it. I'm loving that, Kim. What would GTD say to do? The first thing would be to do a comparison between how much time it's going to save you. Now, that for me was twofold. It wasn't just the time. It was the intricacy of it. If you imagine that you've got the show notes for the show, which is probably like, if it was printed out, about A4 to A4 and a half, so 2 letter-sized pages of yours in the States. If you had to process that by hand, it might take you, I would allocate myself for that, about 10 minutes. But it's 10 minutes every time you do the show. But you don't want to take a year to write something to fix that 10 minutes, then it doesn't make sense. So I actually said, what we now try and do is work in blocks of 20 minutes. So give it 20 minutes and at the end of 20 minutes, see where you're at. At that point, you might think, I have no clue, so I'm going to give it another 20 minutes. I think if you have no clue, I would definitely give it another 20 minutes. At the end of the next 20 minutes, if you come to a point of, okay, I see where we're at now, and I would guesstimate if I spent another hour on this, it would be done, then I would do it. But if I estimated at the end of it that it was going to take like a week, then I would put it on one side. The trick then is don't just put it on one side and don't add any meta information to it. Put the project on one side, but put in it that today's date and the fact you did the first 20 minutes and this happened, you did the next 20 minutes and you took a decision of X, Y, and Z. And then put in what you're thinking at that point. You know, I've made the decision to leave this at this point because I think it will take at least 2 days for me to fix this script. And then future you can look at that and make the decision of, okay, now it's Christmas and I've got 2 days, I'm going to fix it. But if you don't put any notes on it, future you has no clue what past you was up to, what you were thinking, how far you got, why you left it. There's just nothing. So documenting everything.
That's what I tell people.
What?
When I do VBA training. Document it.
I think the problem is...
I don't always eat my own dog food, though.
I think the problem...
A bit like Lola.
When you say to document something, is that a lot of the time, you don't actually know what to put, you know, what to say. And you feel a very, very self-conscious about it. But you have to remember that the person that's reading it is future you. So it's better that future you looks at these notes and thinks, oh, how pretentious, than thinks, why didn't you make any notes, you idiot? Which is where I was at when I looked at this script. So I have since done that. That was the script for the show notes, but then I got carried away with my little self. There's also another job that I showed you how I did in Sublime Text, and it was all with magic keys, and it took me... I'd go into Hindenburg, I'd copy the set list, I would paste it into Sublime Text, and it would probably take me less than 2 minutes. So we're back to a minute, 2 minute rule. But the thing is, that's where I talked about units of distraction. So if on my to-do list we had a task, and the task was process the set list for, what do we do this week? The Irish Inspiration Show. First question, the 2 minute rule. Would it take me less than 2 minutes to do that? And the answer is probably yes. Yes. So, but what does that entail? His 2 minute rule is just do it. But what would it actually entail? So I am in my to-do system, whatever that is. It could be a piece of paper on the desk, post-it note, could be Notion, could be things, could be anywhere. But wherever it is, that's what's on it. Fix. You know, get the set list into the system. If you don't do that, because the first option is, should you do it at all? Oh, I've done the show now. I don't need to put the set list in Notion. Why would I do that? The show's there. Just play it. What songs are in it? And how do you find out? Now, if it were me, I'd open up the original Hindi file and look. But I can't guarantee 3 years from now I'm going to even be using Hindenburg. So... good, no t-shirt. Mike doesn't have access to the Hindenburg file. So his only way of finding out what's in that audio file, what is in that show, is to play it. And that's going to take him an hour because the show's an hour. You could try whizzing through, but you might miss a track. So it's actually easier to do it at the beginning, and future you will thank yourself. Just as Deb says, cite your sources. Exactly. Put in the playlist. So back to our 2 minute rule. Can it be done in 2 minutes? Yes, it can. But this is what's involved. Switch your context from your to-do list to Hindenburg. Once in Hindenburg, you need to go and find the file. So switch your context to file management. Then you open the file and then you're looking at the file. First thing you're going to have to do is switch your context to audio editing mode and make sure that all the stuff is spelt right. And then copy that. Switch your context again, now you're in a text editor. Paste it into the text editor, switch context again, now you're in editing mode. Now I'm in magic key mode. Run the magic keys on it, copy it, and then context switch again into the management system for the shows. Finally, paste the thing in. And then finally, after that, you're then going back, and then you can tick that item off on your list. Context change again. That's 8 context changes. So my rule, instead of 2 minutes, was 2 units of distraction. There's 8 in there. So that's not happening. Not in 2 minutes, it's not. So I would put that, I would leave that on my to-do list. That would not, that would go somewhere else. That would probably go in, once I'd realised that I had more than one show to backfill the playlist from, I'd group them together. And that way I lose, if I've got 5 shows and there's 8 contact switches. That's 40. But if I only have to contest switch into Hindenburg once, then I'm reducing the number of contact switches. My problem with the contact switching is, as I go from one to another, there's always the risk of a distraction. I'm now in Hindenburg and I go up to the top and I click on file and I click on recently opened files and I see one in there that I need to do something with, and then I'm off on another rabbit hole. So if I can group them together, that's probably better. So that's why I ignore the 2 minute rule, because while it's 2 minutes, at the end of that 2 minutes, it's probably more like 5, because I'm cursing then that the file's not where I thought it was and I've spelt something wrong and I need to fix that. And it takes me, if you're disrupted, it's supposed to take you 20 minutes to get back to where you were. So if for every 2 minute job, it took 20 minutes to get back where you were, then it's not a 2 minute job, is it? So it's the 2 unit rule. Hello, Tracy. So that was what I was doing with that. Now, what was I talking about in relation to that? Ooh, let's catch up with what's in here first. iMac and Jobs, that was it, wasn't it? But Kim's fascinated by Jack the Ripper. Ooh, there's plenty of stuff about Jack the Ripper here, including Ripper Tours. There's also a new book out called Ripperology, I think. That is a big thing. I must admit, I have researched that for years and years. If anything comes out about that, I'll watch it. I absolutely love that. Although they think they know now who it was, a DNA match. So that finally they think they've got it. Right. So now you're after iPads and watches. Is it not too soon for iPads, or is it just me? iPads
came out in March.
iPad Pros came out in March.
The start of the pandemic.
I'm not saying that there won't be a new iPad, but it surely wouldn't be a Pro model. It would be the model that came out last year in the autumn. So they've got kind of a dual release on it. It's the more cost-effective model for kiddies and schools and stuff and people who don't need a pro-powered one. But if there was iPads this time, I'd think that was disgusting. I thought it was a bit off in March, but that would be terrible. Tracy and I were discussing the iPad 3-4 debate. That was the first one that was Retina. I actually bought that without Mike knowing. He was just here when he got home. I had a right old giggle with Jane about that. It's called Cyril. We were having a laugh on one of our MacBytes lives as to what we should call the iPad. And Jane said, oh, Cyril. So I actually called the iPad, iPad Cyril. The venerable iPad Cyril. Very heavy now looking back. But the Retina thing was fantastic. It really was. But I was a bit peeved in the autumn when they brought the one out with the lightning cable on it, because your peripherals all changed, but it wasn't worth the upgrade because that was the only change. There was a tiny speed bump and the port. I didn't particularly have a problem with the iPad per se, but I did think that was a bit off. I didn't get the 4, and then it all fragmented after that. It went iPad Air and stuff like that. I got one, that would have been year 3, so it would have been 2012. So I got iPad Cyril in 2012, and I didn't get another iPad till the autumn of 2014. So it was 2.5 years before I bought another one. And then since then, obviously, there have been quite a few you saw on my devices. But I did feel with that, it didn't sit right with me. They could have waited. That was just greed. It was greed because if the phones had a lightning port, it made sense for the iPad to have a lightning port. But to bring it out 6 months after the other one was just, let's get a sales boost for Christmas. And I couldn't agree with that. Did not agree with that. Let's have a look. I think they're talking about the cheap one. I don't think it'll be a Pro. I did not know Father Ted was on Amazon Prime. I'm wondering if it's on our Amazon Prime. But from memory, isn't it on YouTube? I think I saw a playlist on YouTube. Big night here tonight. Oh, new episode of Strike. Can't wait. But I think I might wait. I think I might record it. I've got a book club meeting today. It's my book club today. So I have a hard out at 8 for my book club. So I need to catch up with the thing. But strike starts at 9. It's like, hey, that's in the middle of my book club. But what I decided to do was rewatch all the others first. I mean, I've read all the books. The books are even more amazing than the TV series. I just think the TV series is so well cast. They are perfect together.
Do I know Strike?
Cormoran Strike. The Robert Galbraith books. Probably not.
I don't think I know it.
They're probably a bit long for you, unless you want to get them on Audible. They're a great read. They are really, really good. Robert Glenister does the narration, and he's fabulous. So the books, I've absolutely loved the books. But the series is so well put together. The guy who plays Cormoran Strike is Edward Burke. Is it Edward Burke? Tom Burke. I knew it was one or the other. His father was the original Watson in Sherlock Holmes with Jeremy Brett. He did the first series. And he's just fantastic. He is perfect. Because when you've read a book, you do have in your mind, you know, you've got a picture in your mind of what that character would be like. And sometimes the TV get it very, very, very wrong. The one I'm thinking of that was shockingly wrong was the first Rebus. The original series of Rebus, they cast, what's his name? Good looking Scottish lad, but he looked like he was 12 in this role. Now, admittedly, he was probably in his 40s at the time. But Rebus was supposed to be like a crumply old character, a bit like Morse. You can't cast someone because they're a good looking...
John Hannah.
That's the one, John Hannah. You can't cast somebody because, you know, they're a good looking piece. There's no... How could you... If you were saying, I'm looking for an actor to play a part, you wouldn't think, well, I'll audition the two of them because they're nothing alike. One is like a young go-getter and the other is like an older grandfather figure, isn't he?
Face with a bag of spanners.
Yeah, crumpily. He's crumpily. And he's Rebus. But John Hannah, no, not Rebus. So when they said they were bringing Strike to TV, I'm like, oh, who could they cast? Because he's supposed to be... youngish, maybe late 30s, early 40s, but again, crumpily. Doesn't like authority. Lost a leg in the war in Afghanistan. You know, who could carry that off? Who could carry the limp off? Who could carry the grumpiness off and it work? And then, of course, you've got the character opposite, which is like the total opposite of him. She's probably in her mid-20s and really positive and upbeat. And when I saw who they'd cast, I thought, not really seen either of them in anything, really. But the first episode, when you're watching the first episode, you could watch it with the sound off. The chemistry between the two of them just crackles. It's amazing. So I want to really, really enjoy that. So I don't try and watch it while I'm in my book club. You're like looking at the subtitles. I've got to leave it. So I decided I would watch the whole lot again. There were three series, but they're very short. The first one had three episodes in it, so that's 3 hours, and the next two had 2 hours each. But they are fabulous. If you're in the UK, they're on the iPlayer. But if you're not, I believe that's a bit tricky. But I'm working on that. Don't worry about that. I'm working on it. Can you just check on YouTube? Is the Father Ted on YouTube? I thought there was. Spanish Prime is limited. No BBC or ITV. Wow. We have a lot of Canadian stuff.
Father Ted, full episodes, YouTube. Yeah.
Yep, it's on YouTube. You might have to VPN.
It's called Father Ted, full episodes.
Whether it is Father Ted, full episodes is a different business. But I thought I'd
see... The uploader has not made this video available in your country.
That's not good. Well, you're going to need a what's it, aren't you?
VPN.
Yeah. So, have you got a VPN? Just pretend you're in another country.
What country is it going to be available in then?
I honestly don't know. Does it say where the uploader's based? Should be available in their country.
Hattrick. It's a company that makes it.
Oh, Tracy says they're a scam. But if it's been uploaded by the people who own it, I don't know. Should you go through the countries and see if it suddenly appears? Of course, you're logged in as well. You might need to not be logged in.
True.
Not great then. Right, what's that one there? Oh, I see a link.
No, but I have found a program on Amazon Prime Video that I could watch.
What's
but
that?
It's not out till tomorrow. It's a documentary about Tottenham.
Oh, is that like the one they did about, was it
City.
Liverpool? Oh, City.
Behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Jose's in it.
They're just snippets. Oh, that's not great. I thought they were all there. We found every episode, 560 odd of them, of, oh, what's that show called? So that's Prisoner Cell Block H. When we were doing a marooned, not marooned, a by request, found the whole lot because somebody had bought a box set but said it was only like 12 episodes, but they loved it so much they wanted to watch it. So I thought, surely they're on YouTube. So I had a look, 564 episodes. So I went back and I said, hey, do you want to watch the rest? And they were just there. I guess they are that old. There's not much point. But then if they are selling the DVDs, but people still want the DVDs, don't they? Even if it's on YouTube, they want the DVDs. So what's your favourite series, Kim? Canadian. We have a lot of Canadian stuff in our Amazon Prime. There's, well, the ones that I've seen. They're like old crime series. There was an immigration series. And it's funny that every time I look at them and I then click to have a look, it's Canadian. It's as though we've just taken a job lot of Canadian programmes.
Yeah, it says that's a bit what's it, isn't it? Smoke and mirrors. What do you call it? Bait and switch.
Mm.
Father Ted full playlist. And like Tracy says, they're just snippets.
Yeah.
3 minutes, 6 minutes, 13 minutes, 11 minutes. In fact, it says full playlist. It doesn't say full episodes.
Kim's found one. Heartland. I don't think we have that here. Let's have a look. Let's check.
I think I've heard of Heartland.
Well, you know me in TV.
Let's have a look.
Worth a try.
Video is not available in your country.
Then we need to find what country it is available. Well, probably America. Try switching to America. I've got lots of DVD box sets, and I do believe this looks like it could be on Prime. So let's find the video thing. There's a link to Prime. No, not Prime now. Prime Video. Do you know, the more Amazon put on their site, the less I can find anything. Go on. Where you go? Prime Video. So that's series, first series. Right, let's have a look. What do we get included? Oh, we get six seasons. Six seasons. A multi-generational saga set in Alberta, Canada. Ooh, I shall add that to my TV thing. Where's the add button now? Oh, add season to watch list. There you go. I've added it. That, I've never seen either of them. But I can't help thinking it does remind me a little bit of the Gilmore Girls. Is it like that? I know somebody who is a huge Gilmore Girl fan. And it was like a multi-generational family thing. Is it anything like that? Don't know. You know me. We are on the promise of a 24 watch, aren't we? With Kaz.
Yeah.
Kaz is a huge fan. I think we should have a synchronised watch. And we could have the chat open at the time. That'd be good.
Yeah.
That was what everyone threatened me with lesbian vampire killers. I do remember the story with lesbian vampire killers and how it became a MacBites meme. It was because Apple used to do a thing called the 12 Days of Christmas. And they gave away one item a day. It could be a song, a book, a game. And one of the things they gave away was a film, and it was lesbian vampire killers. So obviously the first thing you did at midnight was like, oh, what's today's thing? And I went to it and thought, lesbian vampire killer, it probably not my thing. But I added it to the account anyway, and then it became a standing joke. I think I've managed 10 minutes, which I was very impressed with. The Vicar of Dibley, that is one of my favourites. The other priest one, where there's a woman. Do you mean the Thornbirds? That had a priest in it and a ranch, set in Australia. I love that one. That was so funny last night with Nina, wasn't it? Nina keeps saying she's naive, but we don't believe Nina. We believe Nina's worldly wise. So we got talking because the by request was about TV shows. Tony had requested a song which was the theme tune to Dr. Kildare, and it was actually sung by the star, which is Richard Chamberlain. So we got talking about all the things that Richard Chamberlain had been in, and Nina was like, oh, and this and this and this, and she'd seen the lot. So I admitted, big thing for Richard Chamberlain, I actually went into the local video shop in the mid-80s because I'd been in and I'd borrowed the film. The film being the King Solomon's Mines. There was a series of them, and Sharon Stone was in it, so when she was very young. So this first one, King Solomon's Mines, I'm like, I want to, you know, as soon as it comes out, I'm getting that, I'm hiring the videotape. You know, when you have to wind it back at the end, that. But when I went in, there was this life-size cardboard cutout of Richard Chamberlain in full regalia as, you know, King, as, oh, what was the character? Alan Quatermain. And I'm just like, oh, wow, look at that. Mesmerised. So Mum said, ask them if you can have it when they're finished with it or buy it from them. You know, because obviously they changed the setup of the shop every couple of weeks. So I said, I can't do that. Don't be ridiculous. So she'd let me. So she goes up and she says, you know, do you sell these things when you finish with them? And the girl said, you can have it if you want. She said, but yeah, I'll put your name on the back. She said, that's what we do. So there was Richard Chamberlain on the front and my name on the back. So when I took the tape back 2 days later, she said, oh, we've done with that. Do you want to take it with you? So I left the video store with a 6 foot Richard Chamberlain under my arm. So this was what we were talking about on the show. At which point, Nina decides to go Google him. Comes back absolutely incredulous. She said, oh my God, I had no idea he was gay. And I'm like, what difference does it make? But she was totally stunned. We're like, Nina, you're so naive. She said, I just, no, how did I not know this? I said, I have no idea, Nina. Everybody else on the planet knew. Oh, another enjoyment with Nina moment, wasn't it, Mike? She's just so funny. Love her to death. I haven't seen the Gilmore Girls, but as I said, I've seen people who were thinking it was a really, really good series and they could just watch it endlessly by all the disc sets, the lot. Oh, it was The Vicar of Dibley, was it? We're on to comedies, not Richard Chamberlain. Oh, what a nice aside, that one. Vicar of Dibley was brilliant. She was absolutely brilliant in it. Sad thing about that is I can't believe it's as old as it is.
Nina's replied on Facebook, I wasn't the only one having fun with predictive text last night.
Was any of it mine?
I don't know.
I don't think it was last night.
I'll give her a like. That's because I call the episode Duck Barton Special Agent.
That's the other thing Nina did. We usually have some fun with food. It started with the ice creams and toast. And Nina had decided she was going to have pate on toast. So she's trying to type on her iPhone one-handed while she's spreading the pate on the toast. She ends up, it auto-corrected from Dick Barton Special Agent to Duck Barton, as in quack quack, Special Agent. So we're all in fits laughing. She's probably laughing. She's got a great sense of humour. So she's probably laughing as well. And she drops the pate and toast on the floor. Has to start again. Poor Nina. But we do have a fabulous time, don't we?
We do, yeah.
Oh, and Deb's Daughter, like some mothers, do have them. Do you know, I didn't see that many episodes. But there was an episode. I thought it was 2012, but I don't think it was. I think it was when there were some games on, but I don't think it was the Olympics. And Michael Crawford, who by this time must have been in his 70s, determined he was going to do his own stunt live. And it involved him being on a bus, and he had roller skates on, obviously. He jumps off the bus. He ends up on like a spiral thing that you would go up to a car park in, only he was going down the other way. He then roller skates into the stadium live where they're having this opening ceremony for whatever it was. And I think it was Bradley Wiggins was going past and he grabs the back of his bike and he does a circuit of the stadium holding onto the bike. And he was in his late 60s or early 70s. And I'm just watching it thinking, wow. I remember at the time he always did his own stunts. He prided himself on it. But, you know, as a kid, you don't really appreciate that. But when you're thinking, you know, it takes me 10 minutes to decide to go downstairs and there's him doing stunts like that. I had a renewed respect for him. I thought that was absolutely stunning. And people were saying to him, don't do it live. Don't do it live. It's too dangerous. Don't do it live. And he did. He was amazing. So I must watch that sometime. I think at the time I was probably a little bit young, but you know, I was at the age where Mum and Dad would decide what was on the TV and they didn't watch that. But yeah, I must watch that. I think that would be rather good. But The Vicar of Dibley, I could just watch and watch and watch. Absolutely. Good night, Paul. We are going to head off ourselves. very soon, like 20 seconds, on account of the fact I've got my book club. I don't know why it feels like Saturday here. For me, it feels like Saturday. There's just something strange in my head telling me it's Saturday, when clearly it's not Saturday. But in my head it is. It could be because it's bank holiday weekend, you know. That could have been it. But we'll work that out. We will, of course, be back with you tomorrow night. But at the moment, I've got to go off and finish reading my book and get into my book club in 30 minutes. So I will head off and do just that. Of course, we are on holiday this week, but we will still be marooned with you all week. We've got to look after Jonathan. How dare they do that? Were you listening to the show?
No.
They've put a walk-in COVID centre on the site of
I just saw that in the chart. Yeah.
Yes, on the site of that retail park we used to go to, which is right next door to Jonathan. So we've got to look after him. He might have to move into Matt Bites headquarters for the duration.
I'm sure he'll like that.
That would be good, wouldn't it? The 14-day isolation required. But then he's not been out, and neither have we, so we should all be fine. We'll work on that. I did not know that song was from Grace. Oh, wow. But I love all your songs. I've got them all together in a little playlist. I love absolutely all of them. You have exquisite taste in music. But for the moment, I'm going to have to say goodbye for today. But remember, we'll be back tomorrow. And it's Bank Holiday Monday in the UK. So Jonathan doesn't have to work, so he has no excuse to be tired. Let's see how he goes this week. But for the moment, it is good night from me.
And it's good night from me.
And we will both see you next time. Stay safe, guys.